worship of God, if it is the key to anything, it is the key to everything. National Library Week. And if there's an appropriate time for me to speak to you in this chapel, perhaps this is a day. But the fact that this is National Library Week, like many so-called special emphasis weeks, is probably known only to a few librarians. Other than this being National Library Week, it would probably be hard to justify my presence before you. For as one disillusioned soul has put it, quote, "Everyone knows that librarians are intellectual quacks. Why, they don't even give grades." If you happen to notice the display in the library, or remember having seen the April issue of the Baptist Program, you may remember that the theme of National Library Week is "Know What You're Talking About. Read." This would seem to be a pointed message for all of those of us who are attempting to speak a relevant word to the world through our churches. I'm sure that all of us agreed with Reverend Howard Ford, president of the North Carolina Baptist State Convention, when he spoke to us of the necessity of an intellectually responsible message. But how many of us are as willing to accept the other side of his affirmation? He went on to point out that an intellectually responsible message requires work and disciplined study. In his Founders Day message, Dr. Perry Crouch called to our attention the fact that many of our people are lost in what he termed this changing world. If we're going to speak to the needs of our people who are struggling to exist in this changing world, we must be aware of these changes and their implications for the church and her people. For this reason, the imperative to read in order to know what you're talking about is just as important for those of you who will attend today your last classroom lecture as for those of you who will return next fall. Our experiences as students should have made clear to us the importance of a disciplined program of reading. We have seen that the lecture system cannot provide all the answers. The lecture is necessary. It's an important beginning, but more independent study is required. This is well illustrated by the experiences of one of our present students. He complained that he was not satisfied with the level of the lectures in a certain course. But upon further conversation, he revealed that he had not done any of the assigned readings, much less independent study above and beyond the required text. The ministry of a man with this attitude will be crippled, for he will not be able to ascertain nor adequately meet the needs of his people. The process of theological education is a lifelong process. The process of theological education is a lifelong process. These words of wise advice from President Binkley will stand us in good stead as we attempt, week by week, to speak to the needs of the 20th century. In order to carry on an intelligent personal reading program, or to encourage our people to do the same, each of us must articulate what might be called in this setting a theology of reading. I wish to share with you what I believe to be a theology of reading that is adequate for minister and layman alike. First of all, reading generates and helps articulate dissatisfaction of things as they are. The self-satisfied have no need to read. Even a little bit of reading can be dangerous to a neat system of thought, for it can pull away the cornerstone. On the other hand, once having started reading, there is no stopping place. Each vision brings with it its imperfections, and these in turn must be met. Reading puts man into the tension between what is and what might be. It's no activity for those who want things to remain exactly as they are. Reading is the path to integrity, but it does not guarantee success. Success and integrity need not be mutually exclusive. But sometimes reading leads one to the position of being an outsider. And outsiders are not always the most welcome members of an educational or even a spiritual team. The goal here is integrity of spirit. And reading at times does bring division between the reader and the non-reader. So we see that reading can be expensive. But back in the recesses of all of our minds are the words from a book about what a man should give in exchange for his soul. Because reading is an individual activity, it enables an individual and an experience to meet without anyone standing between. In an age in which we mutually covenant with one another in order to be something we sometimes really aren't, we soon lose touch with reality. An amazing portion of our nation's goods and services are designed to cushion us from this reality. Reading reestablishes this touch. While reading leads to an earthly reality, it also exercises the imagination, and the result is frequently suspect. There lurk in our minds uncomfortable feelings that when we read novels or other works of the imagination, that we're not using our time to the fullest advantage. This puritanical heritage is a heavy burden, far too expensive a one to continue. Imagination is merely a projection of reality, a groping for more profound truths than today's new scientific formula can contain within its neat symbols. When the imagination withers, the fundamentals of life become dull and stunted. In our own day, the works of creative literature have all but established a new low in readership. We need not debate the results. They are clear to us all. Reading is conformity's greatest enemy. The mass man, who is the product of images stimulated by advertising, becomes increasingly difficult to stereotype the more that he reads. Fads, labels, slogans, and even singing commercials all have a way of failing the exam when tested by the reader. Reading is also wealth. Clearing the air of commercials would be the least of the results of saturation reading. After all, commercials are merely derivative from the devotion to the goods of this world. Conformity is important in our type of culture because it is the accepted route to those things which we value most: sufficient wealth and sufficient status. But something happens when people become readers. They discover a vast realm of wealth, far greater than the holdings of our most affluent tycoon. And somehow, the problem of status melts like snow in the sun. These are the reasons that readers are revolutionaries. Reading is also a cure for bigotry. Books offer arguments for both sides. And as the evidence is accumulated, the barriers of race, creed, and color fade away in the growing awareness of our common humanity. It has been suggested by someone that just one generation of readers would clear our court dockets of most of the constitutional issues crowding them today. Reading brings no passive, personal peace. If it's peace of mind and ease of soul that you're after, stop reading. Continued reading makes short shrift of the simple rules for wealth, health, and happiness. What continued reading does offer is the tentative conclusion, the hypothesis sufficient for testing, and perhaps most important, the humility that springs from a knowledge that a vast realm yet exists, which when discovered, may play havoc with our own little systems. Reading offers pleasure. Edward Newton, although perhaps a little overly enthusiastic, said it far better than we ever could. To quote him, There may be joy in heaven. I'm told there is. But the evidence is certainly not conclusive. And I'll take my pleasure in my library. And finally, if we are to participate in our culture, we must read. There's no other way to meet the minds of the centuries. Without reading, there's no taste, no judgment, no vision. Reading is the soul's most nourishing medicine. Books like Israel have many woes. Their authors labor to bring them forth, and their users weep for the fallen and the trite. But if we are to participate in the lifelong process of theological education, books are and will be important to us. May we pray. Holy Father, in thy presence we acknowledge our sinfulness and our many inadequacies, but we rejoice and offer grateful thanks for the joy and strength that is ours through Jesus Christ as we attempt to minister each day in his name.